Hi everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rurkraut.
And today we have our recap of the 96th Academy Awards. We made it. This is our season finale. We will be going through what we loved about the show, maybe our favorite parts, how we thought the telecast went, going through the surprises of the night. I'm excited to break it all down. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good show.
I'm really excited to talk about this because that telecast was the best thing I have ever seen. I need the producers, the writers, the directors, everybody who made that telecast win awards. I was shocked at how fast things moved, how the jokes just kept landing. And usually there's some mishap going on. There are some cringe moments and maybe we still had a couple, but overall, I was so pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as the changes to the show, right, they moved it up an hour. So it started at 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. It did start a little bit late. There was a moment when I think we were all just like texting different people asking like, are you on a delay? Is it live for you? Am I behind? Because, you know, you want to be on time to see these winners come through. And I think we were still on the red carpet with Billie Eilish and Phineas at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
But once it got going, I mean, the show ended before Abbott Elementary was supposed to start at 10:30. So it did feel like a really brisk ceremony. It felt like peppy and exciting. I think there were some jokes that didn't land for me, like, do we really need Jimmy Kimmel to make the joke about how long Killers of the Flower Moon is? Really? Like, we've heard that so many times before. But I think overall, again, there were some exciting moments that we'll get into. And I really loved the acting categories and how they were presented. I felt like that was a really exciting thing. And I have to say, there were certain races that obviously I wish had different outcomes, but there was only one winner that I thought was legitimately bad, and that was an animated short. So only one out of 23 is pretty good.
Yeah, we can talk about some of those things that definitely that I didn't like in a second. But starting off, what had me is that in our group chat with the McDowell twins and your sister, someone had said like, oh, Ryan looks great. Ken is great. And you thought that maybe I'm Just Ken was going to start the ceremony. So I was frantic. I was on my phone. I'm like, oh my God, are we live? This is the first year I had ever had friends over. And I had only planned it like earlier in the day. So I was like, great, I have to cook. I had this like whole menu planned. So I'm finishing cooking like less than 5 minutes to 7 o'clock, getting everything ready. People are just showing up. And I'm just like, where am I? My head is in four different places at the same time. And the show not starting on time. I was so confused. But because of those pro-Palestinian protests, people couldn't get to the ceremony. And it was like commercial after commercial when they were just stalling for people to get there. And I liked Mark Ruffalo's comment on him rushing in. You know, he didn't want to talk to any of the press because he's like, we're late, we gotta go. And he goes, it's because of these protests, humanity is winning, or something like that. So they understand what's happening, and there was no ill will towards that. And I'm glad that the producers, again, learned how to work around certain things that in previous years, when things go awry, there's just chaos and people stall. And I think there was so much fluidity this year to help ease some of those moments.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we'll talk about the lack of political commentary in speeches or when it was included and how well it worked. But let's get into the big winners of the night. So Oppenheimer, I think as expected, with 7 wins of the night, tying the count that Everything Everywhere All at Once had last year. That 8, that Slumdog Millionaire one, proves to still be elusive. But the Oscars it collected, we have picture, director for Nolan, actor for Cillian Murphy, supporting actor for Robert Downey Jr., cinematography for Hoyt van Hoytema, film editing for Jennifer Lame, and original score by Ludvig Göransson. Those are all, I think, really good wins. I think Some people, including us, maybe expected it to pick up more, but 7 is a great haul. Poor Things also did really well, winning 4 actress for Emma Stone, makeup and hairstyling, costume design, and production design. And I think going into the night with Poor Things, I feel like a couple of things happened. I feel like last year, because we didn't match with BAFTA at all, people thought, okay, maybe Poor Things, the overperformance at BAFTA might not translate at the Oscars. The Favorite also was sort of cursed. I love The Favorite, and that did really well at the BAFTAs. And I remember seeing that lose original screenplay to Green Book, and seeing that lose, I think, some of the technical Oscars that we thought it might have to Black Panther. We weren't sure if those would translate, but the Academy clearly loved Poor Things.
Yeah, the winners for the night were fairly spread out. We had 7 out of the 10 Best Picture nominees winning awards. So I still think overall the awards did fairly well. And a big winner of those was The Zone of Interest, taking not only international feature, but sound as well. And I think a lot of people going into the night expected Anatomy of a Fall to take multiple awards based on how it did at the BAFTAs. But both of those movies were heavily nominated there too. And I think with Zone taking a second award shows that it had the love that it deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. And The Zone of Interest, one of my favorite movies of the year. I screamed when it won sound. I was so excited for Taryn Willers and Johnny Byrne. We talked about that lovingly on our Contender series and as we reviewed the film throughout the season. But I genuinely think this is one of the best wins in the category's history. It is just such an inspired pick. And I love when the voters don't just check the box and they get really creative and they actually watch these movies. And this is a case where they did that. And I was so excited for that. I mean, does it sting that Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win an Oscar? Absolutely. I would have given that movie multiple Oscars. I think it's just a stunning, groundbreaking achievement. But ultimately, like, the film will stand the test of time. People will be watching that movie for decades to come, and it doesn't necessarily need Oscars to remind everyone of how great it is. That's always the conundrum we get into with the Oscars is, you know, because we cover them and because I love watching them, I want my favorite movies to win. But ultimately, I think that the movie will be just fine and people will celebrate it for generations to come. It's such an important feat in filmmaking. And Scorsese's used to this by now. This is his 3rd film with 10 or more nominations to get a goose egg at the Oscars. So they don't appreciate him. And maybe they don't deserve him because he's our greatest living filmmaker.
Yeah.
But he knows it in every profile of him, especially in that great GQ one that Zach Baron wrote. He talked about that the Oscars and that the Academy, they've never really been ready to embrace him. So he's okay. He was happy just nodding along to I'm Just Ken, which was incredible.
He's there for the fun of it all. And we'll mention Lily in a second, but the video you sent us of seeing him speaking to her after the loss, I could just only imagine him saying, like, look, I've won one award over my 50 plus year career here. Mm-hmm. You know, does that really matter? Like, don't worry about it. Don't take it to heart because you will be here again. And just like this rousing speech of him saying, like, F it. Don't worry. Have fun. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love the I'm Just Ken dancing and him going with his daughter. It was just very sweet. And going back to The Zone of Interest, what this showed me, because yeah, during their speech, Taryn Willers and Johnny Byrne, hearing them speak, I just kept going, oh my God, oh my God, this is happening. And there was just what I felt so much crowd swelling support in different categories where, yes, we cover them in Contenders, and that makes predicting hard, but not knowing how everybody is feeling throughout the season, or maybe how pundits are capturing that in a different way, made last night so surprising for me. So seeing that support there, some other surprises we had, The Boy and the Heron winning animated feature, I screamed. So there was so much love there for Hayao Miyazaki. And then also in visual effects, the VES leader, the creator, I thought maybe that would just, you know, win, but it went to Godzilla Minus One, and they jumped out of their seats with all of their Godzillas in hand and ran to the stage. It's a sweet moment, and it's something that you want to see, but to actually see it happen just makes you feel so good inside, and that people do really vote with their hearts.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, I think we get so caught up sometimes in predicting. It's like, oh, what did this guild do? Or what is this stat? But ultimately, it is just, what movie did the most people like in these categories? And I think that's what we saw really across the board, was just support for certain movies. And we did speculate, I think, in visual effects, if Godzilla Minus One could pull it off, because it's difficult to just go by the guild. That's just the group of visual effects artists voting. When you open it up to the membership, you know, they might be, and they clearly were, inspired by the underdog story and just wanted to vote for that team. I wish that the Oscars gave more time to all winners giving their acceptance speeches, but especially to winners who don't speak English as their first language. I think instead, one, it should be encouraged for, especially as the Academy becomes more international, for the winners to give their acceptance speeches in their native language, but also for interpreters to be on stage to translate those speeches for the audience and to actually give them their time, because I felt like this team was so rushed. And just being up there and having to, you know, have that clock counting down with how much time they have left to give their speech, they should have been given, I think, the time that they needed. But I love seeing those little baby Godzillas go up there. And when they won and the cameras went out to them in the crowd, seeing them hold up those little Godzillas, that was so exciting. And I was so happy for them.
And red carpet shout out to, if you saw their shoes, they have the Godzilla claws as their heels. It's just, they went all in and they really deserve this win.
I completely agree. So let's talk about Best Actress. So I think that overall the winners in the show was off to a really good start. And then we had Best Actress, which we knew would be a nail biter. And it ended up going to Emma Stone for Poor Things. We both predicted Lily Gladstone. I think if SAG wouldn't have gone to Lily Gladstone, I would have just predicted Emma Stone, called it sewn up. But that SAG award really tricked me here. And I think Emma was genuinely surprised that she won. I think she also thought that Lily Gladstone was going to win. You could see that flash over her face. But I think, you know, as much as I didn't love Poor Things as much as the other films, I do remember like seeing her performance for the first time and thinking it was different and the kind of daring performance that the Academy doesn't always recognize. It was just hard because this year I was just rooting for Lily so hard, and I loved that performance, I think, the most in the category, and I just was really excited about the possibility of seeing her go up there and what that win would have meant, you know, for her to be the first Native American woman to win Best Actress, only the third woman of color to win Best Actress for a performance that is so subtle and quiet and just towering. It's a colossal work to me. And for me, it really was one of the best performances of the year. So I was really hoping she would get to go up there. But I think if she, you know, if she had to lose to someone, Emma isn't giving a bad performance. In fact, like it's the opposite. It's just one of those things where you just wonder about how history looks back at the Oscars. And I think what could have happened in this category that would have been, you know, really inspiring. When you see those videos of Indigenous kids rooting for Lily, it's hard not to, I think, get swept up in that and the possibility of it being a history-making moment. And we know what Emma has coming next. She already has another Yorgos Lanthimos movie coming out potentially this year. So we know she has exciting things coming. And I honestly hope that she and Lily can work together in the future, because she's talked about how they've become friends over the campaign trail and also how important producing is to her. So I hope that they can actually work together on a project, because they're both very funny in their own ways too. And great actresses, of course.
I still think Lily's nomination is very inspiring and will bring up so many Indigenous actors that want to pursue acting, knowing that there is a chance. I saw Tim Cook on the red carpet giving an interview. I say, oh my God, what is he going to say? But he talked about this and hoping the same thing. And Apple TV Plus did acquire Lily Gladstone's movie from Sundance last year, Fancy Dance. So they actually are doing things to promote different works from people of color. So I'm excited for this. I agree on what you're saying with, you know, Lily having more projects. This definitely isn't the end for her by any means. Just because she's lost, she will have so much more potential. And I'm excited to hear about the offers that she'll be getting after the Academy Awards. And Kihoi Kwan talked about this on the red carpet as well, is, you know, his life really hasn't changed. He's an Oscar winner and he's very happy. But professionally, he was getting offers so quickly after the awards. And I think this is going to happen for her as well. So there's a lot to look forward to. I know this was such a disappointing moment for me too. I just said, oh no, it's all I could say for like a minute. I was just like, oh no. I just felt so bad. But I think in time we will be more okay with this. I understand the win. You know, it wasn't a BAFTAs thing. It was, there was a lot of support for Poor Things along the way. And I think I wanted to discount those as well and hope for something like Michelle Yeoh to win. But she's also been a staple, and Lily is not as well known in certain parts of the industry. She's definitely been working for a long time as well. And, you know, we've talked about certain women on the pod and her work with Kelly Reichert. I think it was just a moment that threw me. I felt like so much momentum was building towards these final categories, and the ones we knew would be Oppenheimer. And even with sound, I was like, okay, it's Oppenheimer's technical time. And then he read The Zone of Interest, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
There are still things to be shooken up here. And we really were waiting for this final award before Oppenheimer came. And then that moment happened, and that was a total flub, but we knew that was coming also. So not as much of a surprise there.
Yeah, I think last night I was really sad about it. I just was like, ugh, I just felt disappointed because I was rooting for her so hard. But I think people will discover the performance in the future still. And that's what I was really hoping the Oscar win would do for her. It would just boost her and be this history-making moment celebrating this performance. But I think that people will come to find it anyway. So I'm hopeful at least. And I will be a champion of Lily Gladstone's work for many years to come.
And I think just Killers in general will be an underrated film in the future. And people will realize that it should have won at least something, but multiple awards. I was even hoping during score, I was like, so many people were clapping for Robbie Robertson. I said, oh my God, is this one of those like crowdswell moments that could happen? It didn't.
Yeah.
But I think another snub of the night in a way was Barbie. I mean, that's, again, something I loved all year. I was repping my gear last night, and I guess I am still now with my Kenergy shirt. But even though they only won one Oscar, they got the most screen time. Jimmy Kimmel started the show calling out Greta Gerwig's snub, and then he goes, why are you all clapping? You are the ones who didn't vote for her. And so that just really set it off for me. And they gave America a lot of screen time. Greta, she looked so good
too. Everyone, they all looked great. Yeah. The thing with Barbie too, it's, yes, Oppenheimer was the best picture winner, and it really was like the night of Oppenheimer in so many ways. It really at times just felt like the night of Barbie. Like, that movie stole the show in so many moments, because especially we will get to the best picture announcement and what happened there, what hit with a thud, it felt like. But Robert Downey Jr., you know, he beat Ryan Gosling. He won supporting actor, but his speech was pretty uninspired. I think I was expecting more from that speech because he'd been winning all season, and he kind of just went up there and did what he's been doing all along, really, and thanked his stylist, but I fully expected him to do this tribute to his dad, especially after that Netflix documentary he produced, but no. So I was just kind of thrown off there. And then the fact that you have Ryan Gosling giving one of my favorite original song performances ever with I'm Just Ken, it was like he won supporting actor in my eyes.
Hearing those opening notes after the commercial, knowing it was coming, him in the cowboy hat, fully pinked out, even with the pink gloves and the studded vest and pants, I was locked in. I saw Billie Eilish in the background, like covering her face because she's trying not to laugh. You had Margot Robbie in front of him, just like, what is happening? And that song just blew me away. The Oscars peaked in that moment. I will say, yeah. Like, that is it. It made this telecast that was already doing so well soar. And I feel like next year's will be like following up Beyonce performing at Coachella. Like, where do you go next after this?
I know. I mean, is it going to be something from Wicked? I don't know. It's hard to know because we just don't know what's coming with the songs. But yeah, it was just such a show-stopping, fun number. I love how committed Ryan Gosling is to the bit at this point. He doesn't really seem to care. He doesn't take himself seriously at all, which is part of the fun of it and what makes him just honestly like the hottest man in that room. And I think, yes, I loved like the ode to Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. That was great. So the choreography, loved that. But also when he was out in the crowd and Greta and Margot were singing with him and just getting so into it, I had that same bit of joy I had in my heart when I first saw Barbie. And I think what makes that movie so special is just like how good it makes you feel. And I don't know. I think coverage around the Oscars, too, is like, oh, they must be so disappointed. They must be so sad about not getting nominated for certain things. And it's like, no, they're having fun. They have a billion-dollar movie. They made the number one movie of the year at the box office. And they're at the Oscars just being silly and having the time of their lives. It just made me so happy to see them. And we have to mention this because we love La La Land. That Emma I singing. Loved the moment when he yes. went over to Emma. Yeah, that was great. Little Mia and Seb reunion.
Yeah, our Mia Seb. Oh, I love that. Just seeing Greta at any moment made me so happy. I cried when she was singing. I cried when she was crying. And then the What Was I Made For performance, which came earlier in the night. But the set design, oh my God. It was like pink ruffled around everywhere. And then you have this really beautiful circle that surrounds the performers that opens up into the pit. And that was just such a touching moment. That was the first song we got, and everyone was just rapt by Billy and Phineas's performance. I really think when you look back at the ceremony, you'll think like Barbie won so many awards because of how much they featured this movie. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That's all I needed. I am so grateful for that, at least. But I'm surprised that we didn't get more jokes we have in the past of people coming out in different costumes, or Jimmy being in like an Oppenheimer costume the whole time, doing some bit related to the Oscar nominees. We got these really small clips, and I think it worked with song where they presented the song and they didn't have to say the nominees. It saved a little bit of time. It's probably minuscule mm-hmm. in comparison of years past, but it did make things feel faster.
Yeah, and they definitely cut down on the number of presenters too, because there were so many double presenters that would do multiple categories like documentary feature and documentary short, or animated feature and animated short. So I think that saved time. I do wish there were more clips though. I love a clip. I love a montage. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's why I watch the Oscars. I want them to be a celebration of not just the year in film, but of the history in film and of the Academy. This is the 96th Oscars. They can tap into so many different things within their history, and it feels like they just aren't really that interested in doing that. So that's just constantly a disappointment to me when I watch the Oscars, is I just always want more in terms of like how we can think creatively about celebrating the historical milestones. But I think that overall, like as a telecast, I'm happy that, and we can get into talking about this now, that there weren't a lot of those extraneous bits of, oh, I'm going to go to a movie theater and ambush this audience of regular moviegoers at a wrinkle in time. Like, thank God we don't do that anymore. I really didn't like those little bits. Or, yeah, like you said, wasting time just getting into strange costumes. We did have a couple of like funny bits like that, but for the most part, they didn't really do anything that would take up a lot of time that was unrelated to the Oscars.
Right. And I appreciate that. You know, calling out the 1974 streaker and having John Cena, I think it was still playfully done in a good enough way that added to him presenting costume design. But again, it was kept to such a minimum. I think it left most of the attention on the presenters themselves and whatever they were doing. Let's start with those acting categories, because this year they brought back previous winners announcing the current nominees. So we had all of last year's winners as one of them. And some of them ended up being friends of the nominees, which I think was my favorite part of that, which made later winners announcing the nominees who read directly off the teleprompter feel a little bit more robotic, but it made it feel so much more genuine and intimate, especially when they showed them on screen talking to each other. I think my favorite response was with Devine Joy Randolph, with Lupita introducing her, but Devine just breaking down as she was speaking. And this was my favorite of the categories. There were a few others here. Jamie Lee Curtis introducing Jodie Foster. I just love seeing a lot of Jodie Foster throughout the ceremony. There was the joke about Taxi Driver and Robert De Niro as well.
I love how she was such a good sport for that too. She was just like, it's true. You could see her mouth that. Jodie Foster is one of the coolest people working in Hollywood. I can't help but just say I love her out loud anytime she's shown or anytime you hear anyone talking about her, because she isn't just like this two-time Best Actress winning legend. She's a producer, director, and she just seems like this, like Jamie Lee Curtis was saying, she's like Bonnie in her abilities to work with people and her leadership. So yeah, I thought that was a really beautiful tribute to her.
She also looked like one of the least dressed people in the room. Yes, supporting actress came first, so I think that did lift a lot of weight off of her shoulders and really anyone from those early categories, just allowing to enjoy the rest of the ceremony. I think also Emily Blunt just, which seemed funny. I think as the ceremony went on, she seemed goofier and goofier. And then after we had the Guillermo Don Julio moment where everyone had tequila shots, there was a cut to Emily Blunt and she was just chatting over Robert Downey Jr.'s shoulder and looked hilarious. So I'm glad that they still had fun. And also the moment with Emma Stone being at the bar when Poor Things won some award and she's like, oh my God, I have to get back out there. My movie's winning. And like waddling back to the theater
with her peplum dress, sprinting back. That was so funny. I feel like supporting actress was my favorite of these categories just because that was when I think most of the women were personally connected to the nominees or like mentioned, like my friend so-and-so. Like I think that made it really, really special. And yeah, when Lupita started talking about Devine Joy Randolph, I started crying because I knew the win was coming, but you could just tell she knew the win was coming too and just was embracing that moment. And she also gave one of my favorite speeches of the night. I think some of her speeches earlier in the season have been like she's been really prepared and they haven't been off the cuff. And this one was just fully from the heart. You could just tell she was feeling everything in that moment and just so appreciative and so grateful of it all and very overwhelmed by it. And I just thought it was such a beautiful way to start the Oscars.
Yeah, I totally agree. Seeing her break down made me want to break down. And her getting really personal, talking about her mom and thanking her. And then her teacher and how she was the only Black girl in class. And starting as a singer, she did opera. And I'm hoping she continues that now that she's won, she gets more opportunities potentially to have a singing role. I would love mm-hmm. for her to option something with that momentum to something that she's really wanted to do. And she's discussed wanting to do some sort of biopic like this as well.
Yeah. Oh, she would be great. And then supporting actor, I loved Tim Robbins because he said what I was thinking, which is that De Niro should be winning. I mean, he flubbed his line.
Oscar winner, I mean.
But yeah, he was right. I loved Christoph Waltz doing Ryan Gosling. That was inspired. And I didn't really know that I needed to hear him talk about Ken.
Yeah, there were definitely some pairings that I wasn't ready for. The other one being Nicolas Cage and Paul Giamatti, who I want to shout out too, because on the red carpet he showed his In-N-Out cufflinks that he was wearing, which I thought was very cute. So I hope he got some after the ceremony.
I loved that one too, like Nicolas Cage's bit about the contact lens and the lazy eye and the joke that he would have done that too. I thought that was really sweet. And I think the thing about these is that I think some of them feel like the actor just sat down and wrote a little ode to their person, and others felt like they were scripted mm-hmm. by the writers of the show. And I feel like I wish they all felt like they came directly from the person. And some will always be better than others, of course, but there were a couple that I thought were really good. That was one of them I did really like. Ben Kingsley for Cillian Murphy, that was a wow moment.
Yeah.
Because I wanted Daniel Day-Lewis to be there, obviously, for Cillian, because they both have an Ireland connection. But getting Daniel Day-Lewis to an award show, we know that's a challenge. But Ben Kingsley, that's a big deal. And he gave that moment, I think, a lot of gravitas. And it felt very important. And I'm sure Cillian was very touched by that, too. And it makes sense, too. He won for a major historical biopic as well. So I liked that pairing. But there were a number of them, too. A very tan Matthew McConaughey talking about a very tan Bradley Cooper.
Oh, Bradley. Not only starring in Abbott Elementary, which was incredible. I think that yes. intro is perfect. But mm-hmm. his mom just also being fully fixed, not on him, when he was talking to Bradley. I loved that.
Gloria is a staple at every awards show with her son. And that woman, she does not stand up for anyone. She is just in a prime seat, living her life. And I love that for her.
We're talking about the good ones, but you mentioned some not so good ones. I think we have to talk about Charlize and Annette. Because I felt like
we do.
Not only Forrest Whitaker was reading straight from teleprompter, but Charlize looking at it, reading, saying Diane, and reversing and saying Diana, not
yet. No, she said Diane twice. Has Charlize Theron seen Nyad?
I thought she corrected with Diana.
No.
Probably not. Probably not.
My favorite was how she said, quote, "I've never been stung by a jellyfish, but seeing you endure it multiple times made me feel like I had. Watching you portray Diane Nyad, is an intense sensory experience. You can taste the salt water, feel the sunburn, and relate to the relentless determination."
That is a winning introduction. That is why I still had hoped Annette could have won.
It fits with the trajectory of this movie and the reception to it, which has been, is it actually a comedy? The tone of Charlize's introduction matched that perfectly, and I loved every second of it. I also thought that Sally Field's introduction for Emma Stone was really sweet.
I love that. Oh, she was probably the one I liked seeing the most on the stage out of all of the acting categories. Besides Jennifer Lawrence, who was very tan and beautiful and didn't do any comedy, which is unlike her at the Oscars, but I liked what she had to say.
Me too. And I think she probably knew that the moment didn't call for comedy because that's such a serious, tragic performance from Lily Gladstone. The other big movie she supported this award season was The Zone of Interest. She hosted all of those screenings for it and just talked about that with, you know, of course, without any humor, with the utmost seriousness. But she's probably a big reason why a lot of people in the industry watched that movie.
Yeah, and we can get to Glazer's speech in a second, but they kept cutting to Sandra Uller, which is such a big part of that film. And she said she never wanted to do a film about the Holocaust, and she took this on. She found the importance in what he wanted to say, and she was just bawling throughout the speech. So I think the fact that J-Law loved that movie so much just says a lot, but a lot of the people in the room felt the same way.
Oh, Sandra. She looked so beautiful, too. I loved her dress.
All of it. Pristine.
Yeah. She looked like it was like old Hollywood glamour, which I always love. And she had the winged eyeliner, too. It was perfect. And Snoop was in the crowd while we're talking about her. I loved having Snoop there in those little bits when Snoop was clapping and then the camera went to Ryan Gosling. That was the best.
I'm glad that he showed up. He was almost bullied into not going because people were mad he was at the luncheon. But I'm glad he was here. He had his own seat. And the like BTS photo of the messy hands clapping was just too much.
Oh my God. It was so cute. I loved that.
And then at the very end of the show with him like fake peeing on Matt Damon's star on the Walk of Fame. A very Kimmel moment. That was the perfect way.
Yeah, but let's talk about some of the really good speeches that we liked from the night. You mentioned Jonathan Glazer. I think before the show, I thought, what is Jonathan Glazer going to say? Because he's going to go up there when Zone inevitably wins international feature. Based on the themes of the movie and everything that he's said in interviews so far this season, I thought that he would, you know, be one of the people to actually mention what's going on right now in Gaza, and he did. And people are very critical of this speech, and I thought it was a great speech and one of the best moments of the night.
Well, a lot of people are taking it out of context. So I think let's read what he said and we can discuss, but he said, "All our choices we made to reflect and confront us in the present. Not to say, look what they did then, rather, look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people, whether the victims of October 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack in Gaza. All the victims of this dehumanization, how do we resist?" So a lot of people are taking refuting their Jewishness out of context and not reading the phrase as the whole. I think Jonathan Glazer and what he said was so poignant and perfect, not only in looking at the past and how we can protect the future, change the future for the better, which is what the movie is doing, but also in relating that to present day and what is happening. And I think that even touches on, you know, how they started the In Memoriam with Navalny, or 20 Days in Mariupol winning, and how the director there was speaking about so many lives being lost in Ukraine and the Russian forces during that war as well. And so I think realizing that there are so many things in common with all of these events is so important to history. And I think reading into his text in the wrong way is so misguided and really unfortunate.
Yeah. He took out a piece of paper. He wanted to be very clear in what he said. He prepared that and delivered it in a very intentional way. And I think it really did connect beautifully with the movie and in what he has been trying to say all along on Hollywood's really biggest stage. Delivering it there is even more impactful than delivering it in press or at a film festival Q&A, which he has been doing that, but this is the place, I think, where it really matters. And I commend him for doing that. That's really brave, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Another speech that I liked was Cord Jefferson's when he won adapted screenplay for American Fiction. A lot of that speech he has been repeating throughout every speech he's had this season. But I think the one thing here that he really emphasized is stop making blockbusters. Instead of making one $200 million film, make 20 $10 million films. I think Hollywood is changing in certain ways, not for the better, in certain ways, yes. But one of those ways is just uplifting independent cinema. And that is so important, especially in the streaming era that we're in. And studios feeling like we need bigger movies just to rake in bigger box office numbers. And I think this year in particular, especially with the list of Best Picture nominees and nominees in general, disproves that so heavily. So I think his point here is really what needs to be listened to by studio heads. And going forward, this is what we want to see. These are the movies we love covering on the pod and watching throughout the year, whether they get nominated or not. You know, Past Lives did really well at the Spirit Awards, and it didn't win here. But there are so many other movies and opportunities for actors and crew members and really every sort of filmmaker to be had with smaller budgeted films too that can still have a really big impact on viewers.
One of my favorite speeches was from Christopher Nolan, which again, like, feels crazy if you would have told me a year ago that Christopher Nolan winning Best Director would lead to one of my favorite speeches. I would have said no way. But I thought this was really beautiful. His point about film being a relatively young art form, and then connecting that to painting and, like, in other art forms that have been around for a lot longer, I found that to be very profound. Like, I just was very moved by it, of him saying, like, imagine being only 100 years in to painting, for instance. Like, that's how far we are into film. And what are the possibilities ahead in that? Look at how much we've already accomplished, but what's ahead? And then he thanked them for honoring him in that and thinking of him as being a deserving filmmaker to really reward and celebrate within that space. I thought that was very moving and very nice.
You know, just because you're going to win the Oscar, we knew that he was one of the people that was definitely going to win the night of, doesn't mean you can't have a perfect speech. And I totally agree. I felt like he almost didn't know how to end the speech. And then he said that and it blew me away. We had another similar moment, you know, talking about the presenters for a second with Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, which I think being paired together, I thought it was more of a Barbenheimer thing, which it was at first. I loved their little jabs at each other's movies. And then I realized, oh, they're both in The Fall Guy. And then it turned into them honoring stunt performers, which I didn't expect this at all. You know, maybe in the future, we're going to have a stunt category at the Oscars after we get casting, which Jimmy talked about in his intro coming in 2 years. But it went into this really beautiful montage of film history. It started with Buster Keaton in The General and Charlie Chaplin and so many films and watching stunts happen. Mission Impossible, the Bourne trilogy. There were just so many films and it was beautiful looking at film in this way. And I think this is exactly what the Academy should be doing, is highlighting certain areas that don't have categories. It doesn't mean we only have to focus on these 23 aspects of film. There are more that we don't usually think of. And I always love BTS scenes at the Oscars, you know, show more of those clips we've had in the past. I felt like the screenplay videos were very short this year and the song performances were shortened too, except of course, I'm Just Ken. But I actually did really enjoy and appreciate this moment.
Yeah, I liked it too. I think when you're talking about also just like celebrating other categories or finding room within the telecast to celebrate people, they need to find a better way to celebrate our honorary Oscar winners than to tell people to scan a QR code to watch their speech. Those need to be in the regular programming. Mm-hmm. Like, they need to be invited. Those speeches need to take place there. I know it can make the show longer, but if you're winning an honorary, I think that needs to happen there. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorite presenters was John Mulaney. Mm-hmm. At first, I was like, why is he here? He's just a comedian, like Jimmy Kimmel, I guess. But when he started talking about sound and then listing quotes, he's like, without sound, we wouldn't have such important lines like, we're going to need a bigger boat. And he was in the Amazon with my mother when she was researching spiders right before she died. I lost it. I can't believe they put Madame Web in the telecast. Like 10 out of 10, no notes. He was so good at this speech too. But this moment when I heard he was in the Amazon, I was like on my feet clapping.
Madame Web was mentioned twice at the Oscars. Dune Part 2, was it mentioned? Is Madame Web, that's our, according to the Academy, you, that's the film of 2024, Madame Web.
Dakota Johnson for every category next year. We need it to happen.
Best sound, Dakota ADR, Johnson. Tahar Rahim, and Dakota Johnson.
Oh my God.
More to come on Madame Web. I think John Mulaney's great, though, and I think he should host the Oscars.
He proved himself.
Kimmel has been doing it for a little bit. I think this was his fourth time. And I think he's reliable, and I understand, like, he's a very safe choice. But John Mulaney knows his stuff. He's funny. He watches all of the movies. And I feel like he would genuinely be a really good host, because I don't think he would go for the low-hanging fruit that Kimmel does sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And then he also did this whole Field of Dreams bit, which was so random, but hilarious.
Yeah.
I also love seeing Kate McKinnon and America Ferrera presenting, again, Barbie co-stars, and this whole bit about dinosaurs, because this was documentary feature in short that they were presenting, and her saying, so who have I been sending all of my tasteful nudes to? And Steven Spielberg saying, me? Just love that.
Steven Spielberg is such a good sport. He really yes. is. I like that he's just kind of assumed this role of elder statesman at the Oscars, who is also the butt of jokes, but seems to just roll with it and be having a good time with it. I love that. I also love that he presented Best Director. He didn't win last year, but I feel like they know the gravity of the moment of presenting Best Director, mm-hmm. and he's the person in the industry to do that. It would have been cool if he gave it to Martin Scorsese.
Right. Well, Kimmel also joked about Spielberg being there. And I'm like, he's a producer for Maestro. Like, he's nominated. Mm-hmm. Like, he should yeah. be there. And he didn't say that, which was a little upsetting. But my other favorite presenters for the night were Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, both donning dresses of their colors from Wicked. So they're teasing that movie already. We are 8 months away from getting that. And the song they came out to was For Good. And I am so excited for this movie. It's one of my favorite songs from that production. So I'm excited to see how they do it in the film. But yeah, it was great to see them together. I can't wait for what's to come.
I can't wait for our future Drama Wild collaboration exactly. about Wicked. We also need to talk about the In Memoriam segment, which is always, I don't know, it's always interesting. This year we had Andrea Bocelli and his son Matteo performing Conte Partiro, or Time to Say Goodbye. This song always makes me cry. But I found the In Memoriam to be very chaotic. I think there was just so much going on. Like, we had them performing, we had an orchestra, we had these dancers. And then when they first started the In Memoriam, the font was so small. I just thought, wait a second, like, is this starting right now? Are they going to change this up so I can actually see these names? What is going on here?
I didn't even notice the dancers, but I really...
You were just in it.
Maybe there really was too much going on. But I loved how they utilized the screens that they had used for acting. I said, oh, wow, this is good. Even if there were two at once, I felt like that helped mm-hmm. move things along. As it ended and they placed like 30 plus names in that circle that I mentioned before from the set, I didn't like that as much because you can't find people's names. I like having the photos along with them. And I understand that sometimes they do get lengthy and they wanted to cut down time. But I think overall, I was okay with it. I mean, just seeing Andrea Bocelli come out was a total shock. And this song to me just screams The Sopranos. That's what I think of every time I hear it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it always puts you in that mindset.
But they did just release this 30th anniversary edition of the song produced by Hans Zimmer. So that's on YouTube. Go watch it. I think it's beautiful. Yeah, this song always does make me cry as well.
Is it time to talk about Al Pacino?
Yeah, I think it's time. What a way to end the ceremony.
So when the presenters were announced, I think a lot of people zeroed in on Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer being paired together to do a Scarface reunion. And I think it was assumed that they would do Best Picture. They are legends in the industry. Michelle should have multiple Oscars. So should Pacino, honestly. But we did get a listener question from Steve. Where was Michelle Pfeiffer? She was listed as a presenter. She had a family emergency, unfortunately, and had to be on the East Coast. I hope that her family is okay and everything's all right. But I would have loved to see her on stage with him, especially, I mean, one, I love Michelle Pfeiffer and I would have been excited to see her. But two, he needed a little bit of reining in up there and some guidance.
Yeah.
He loves an unscripted moment, but this was wild.
I think it was more of he knew what he had to present, but needed help doing it. I wish they could have gotten some other co-star or director. God, put Marty up there with him.
Yeah. Invite Francis Ford Coppola and they can do a Godfather Part 2 reunion. It's the 50th anniversary. Like, do something special. The fact that the only reference that we had to the 1970s, I believe, was that streaker, upsetting. 74 is an incredible year. Why are we not talking about The Godfather Part 2? Bring Diane Keaton. That would have been very chaotic. I don't know if she actually would have known what to do in that moment with him.
Maybe they will next year. I think maybe they'll learn from this because next year will be the 50th for that ceremony. But
yeah,
I think it was just maybe he forgot. But like with Song, they didn't read through the nominees. We had the presentations of the songs. I saw it amazing. But then Picture happened and I thought the same thing. But apparently they were going to do a montage of all of the Best Picture nominees names. And he just totally skipped over. And there was a point previously in the ceremony where someone was starting to open the envelope before they had done the clips. And I'm like, oh my God, no, stop. Do not open it yet. And that's what he did. Yeah. That's how he ended it. He goes, my eyes see Oppenheimer. And he started reading the producers. And they were like, oh, that's it. And the cameras had to chaotically find the Oppie cast to show them coming up.
It was because even if they show, like they have, you know, they show all of the packages of each nominee throughout the ceremony, they still read the nominees. Like we still hear because the producers aren't mentioned during those and they read those names. Like that's what they do at the Oscars. So the fact that he just went up there and said, my eyes see Oppenheimer, was so anticlimactic. If it would have been a year where we didn't know what movie was going to win, I don't know what would have happened in that moment. It would have been so weird. But the fact that we knew on top of it, like everyone knew Oppenheimer was going to win. It had been winning all season. It really did hit like a thud. You were like, wait, okay, did that just happen? And you're right. They had to scramble. Like once he started reading the producer names, the score started blaring, which was kind of like the movie. They had the cameras had to find them. Like you said, it was crazy.
Spike Lee walked so Al Pacino could run.
Oh my God, the can, the Palme d'Or.
Spike Lee reading and the Palme d'Or winner is Titan. And they're like, no, 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 no. Yeah. They didn't have anyone to shield Al this time.
No, he needed it. He needed help. I told you my dream pairing was to have Faye Dunaway and Jack Nicholson up there.
Again, maybe next year. I hope so.
Because Emma Stone won Best Actress and Jimmy Kimmel did make a joke about that because that card was what led to the La La Land debacle. But Warren Beatty wasn't even there with Annette Bening, and I was like, this poor man has...
Well, he's been banned whenever Emma's nominated. He can't come back to
the Oscars. Yeah, if Emma's nominated, he can't go.
Poor Annette has to come alone. Oh, boy. Well, we had some other listener questions. Joe Greeley said, sad Miyazaki and Wes Anderson both missed the chance to accept awards. Wes, I think more importantly, because this was his first Oscar, but he is starting filming in Germany today, so I understand that. Miyazaki does have an Oscar for Spirited Away, but I would have loved to have seen him last night.
Me too. I hope that he was peacefully sleeping. And woke up to the very exciting news. Yeah, Wes Anderson, I was surprised he wasn't there, but he's, you know, he follows in the footsteps of many great directors who are never in attendance at the Oscars. If you think back to like the 70s, they weren't going. Speaking of great directors from the 70s, we had a stat broken. Stanley Kubrick, that we mentioned on...
Oh, yeah.
On our visual effects Godzilla. Episode. With Godzilla Minus One, Takashi Yamazaki, he becomes the next director to have an Oscar for visual effects after Kubrick for 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Well, he's in good company now.
Definitely two great winners in the category's history. We also got a question from Roy Mao, acting clips or introductions?
Why not both? Maybe it's too chaotic if while they're introducing, they have clips of them in the background. I think that might be too much, but I do still really love clips and I hope they can find a way to intermingle them in the future.
Yeah, I think what would be really nice, I agree, both. I think they should do like a clip package of all five nominees before the five come out to speak about each one. I know it adds to the runtime of the show, but I think it would be really nice and a good way to incorporate both. Our last question / comment comes from Chels, who dropped in a picture of our beloved Kate from The Traitors sitting looking very sad with the comment, discuss.
Yeah, I think we were both feeling that way at the end of the ceremony last night. I mean, we could also talk about The Traitors and Kate.
And it's honestly, they're kind of mirror images of each other. What started out as a thrilling event went south.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Like with The Traitors, when Trishel and CT, sorry, spoilers, won, I just felt so deflated. And I felt pretty deflated by the end of this ceremony too. Mm-hmm. But I'm feeling a bit better now. Ready to head into 2024 movies, including Fancy Dance, Lily Gladstone's latest that's coming out that you mentioned earlier.
So in wrapping up the episode and the year, our final draft point update, which we will get to the listener submitted draft winners shortly, but from our episode with Bennett scored in third with 148 points. I was second with 197, and Sophia took it away with 297 points. How does it feel to be a winner?
I'd like to thank the Academy for this honor of winning our Oscar Wilde award season fantasy draft. This is my first solo win, so I'm very excited. It's a really fun exercise that we do every year, and we love doing it before festivals because we really don't know anything. Cannes was the only film festival we had, and you pounced on Anatomy of a Fall. I took The Zone of Interest and Killers of the Flower Moon. So I think we did what we could, but what was interesting is no one took Poor Things. Like some of these movies that really did just kind of come up later on in the season that we maybe weren't expecting as much, those always throw us for a loop. So it's just a fun exercise and it's one of our favorite things to do every year. What's funny also is that we didn't even end up tallying our Jamie Lee Curtis award for the biggest campaigner, but I have to say I picked Bradley Cooper, so my lead only would extend.
I think with that category, I would say you and Bennett both win. I had Carey Mulligan and Bennett had Greta, but I think both of your picks were definitely out there campaigning very hard. Carey had been at a few events and interviews and roundtables, actually, but definitely Bradley and Greta went harder. And I was scared about how Poor Things would do. It just seemed like too radical of a film for the Academy. But next time, you just have to go with it and risk it all.
They like Lanthimos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a risk-averse industry, as Cord Jefferson loves to say, I guess you just got to go for it. So next draft, I know how to be.
Well, Dune Part 2 is up for grabs in the next draft. So we're going to have to fight over that and figure out ways to incorporate that.
I'm excited. The draft will change, but I do love that. I love that we do this and like to see how it ends up.
Well, it wouldn't be a season finale of Oscar Wilde without our favorite tradition, smash or pass. This year, we're including real nominees and people who are at the ceremony as themselves, not as their characters, or as their characters if you'd like.
Okay, so our first one, Taylor Zakar Perez, who showed up in this baby blue suit. He's been at multiple ceremonies. He was in the kissing booth. Last year, he was in red, white, and royal blue. He's blown up. That baby blue suit, he is a baby girl now. This is a hard smash.
Just like his kissing booth star who came before, also baby girl, Jacob Elordi. This is a smash. Okay. Next, we have the hot lawyer from Anatomy of a Fall, Swan Arlo.
Well, and also on the red carpet, they were all touching his hair. Milo Machado Grenier. Everyone was going at it, which was also very hot. I will smash here too.
Everyone knows my answer to this. Again, I was just so surprised. Like, I didn't know who this person was prior to seeing Anatomy of a Fall. And what happened over the course of the movie was that I just kept asking myself, am I attracted to this man? What is going on? He's not my type at all. But I have to say smash, especially, did you see that picture of them? It was like him, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Justine Triet, and they all have cigarettes hanging out of their mouths.
No, was this an after party photo?
It reminds me of that video of PTA after Boogie Nights when he has the cigarette hanging out of his mouth and I am just like a moth to a flame. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I was into it. So, smash.
Next up is Colman Domingo. He was looking so dapper in his tux. I'm going to say smash here. But he's also like adorable and sweet and feels like an incredible parent. So this is also kind of hard.
Colman Domingo, beautiful man, always well-dressed. He would not be into me though. And that's why I would have to say pass, especially after hearing the story of how he met his husband on Graham Norton. I'm not going to get involved. Oh my God. It's amazing. Have you seen this?
No, but I'll have to look it up.
You need to watch it. It is the most serendipitous, beautiful story.
Aww.
Next, we have Riz Ahmed.
I wish he presented. He was giving us Dune Couture.
Dune Couture.
Definite smash.
Oh my God.
Have him show up in Dune Messiah.
He's always a smash. I agree.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who also presented, but I saw his silver suit on the red carpet. It's a hard pass for me.
I'm going to say pass too. I don't know. More for everyone else, I guess. I picked this scrawny, like, French lawyer who I'm not picking The Rock. I don't know.
That's okay.
Next, we have Sean Wong.
My future husband, Sean Wong, director of
Oh my God.
99 WIPO and DD coming out, the Sundance hit. He is adorable when they intro'd him on the red carpet with his grandmothers. Oh my God, it's just, it warms your heart. He's so sweet to them. And he just seems like so genuine and thoughtful. And I'm excited to see more of his films.
I'm going to say pass.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you hesitated. I think he's way too young for you, or young looking for you.
Yeah, I was like, we're the same age. But yeah, he's too young for me. That still stands.
Okay, one more from the red carpet. Picture you sent me earlier today. Jesse Plemons with wife Kirsten Dunst, but just Jesse Plemons.
Smash. Like, kind of easily. I feel like Jesse Plemons is a great guy. I trust Kiki.
They looked amazing together. And I will say smash here. I will not smash him Killers, but I will here for sure. He looks so great in his suit.
I totally agree with that. Okay, next we're moving into the telecast. So that portion of the show, away from the red carpet. First up, Jimmy Kimmel.
I will hesitate and then say pass, but he didn't look bad. He did a great job. All of his jokes hit, but overall, I'm still going to say pass.
Yeah, I feel like that's a full Lewis thing, the writing.
Yeah.
He's a pass for me.
Next, we have John Cena.
John Cena. I have to say, his body type, I heard this on The Big Picture, is he's shaped like a triangle. That's how Sean Fennessy described him, which is really funny.
Oh my God.
So I would say, like, straight on, it's intimidating. It's a lot. But I saw a picture of him on Twitter. Yes. The backstage photo from Profile. And it's a smash. What am I saying?
Dylan responded with, it's a shelf.
You could set an Oscar on it.
You really could. I'm still saying pass. Not my type.
Okay.
But props to him for coming out nearly naked in front of millions of people. That would be terrifying.
Chris Hemsworth.
Easy smash. He looked great presenting, and I could go by this speech alone and say smash.
I totally agree. I'm not even going to think about it or entertain another option.
What about John Mulaney?
This is a pass for me. I have a lot of friends who are really into him, who, like, he is one of their, like, celebrity men that they love, but I've just never gotten it. I'm going to say pass.
I think this is a case for me that he did so well. I will say smash. He looked incredible in all black. Someone who didn't look as good in all black to me is Robert Downey Jr., our next option.
I'm going to say what I said on the Oppenheimer episode. This man looks like my dad. Pass. They look so much alike to me. I have to say pass.
Yeah, it's a pass for me too.
Next up, we have our 12-time Oscar loser, Bradley Cooper.
He just looks better and better. And I don't know if you've seen these TikTok videos of these doctors who, not only there are some dentists who question celebrities' teeth and how they look, how they've gotten them done, and if they're good or bad, but there are doctors too who do, like, celebs who have facial work done, and they've done one on Bradley Cooper and him having a facelift or other procedures, but he just does look better and better over time. So I'm gonna say smash.
Wait, what has he had done over time?
Like, you can see in pictures when people have scars in front of their ears, that means that they've had this done, but I think it's like a facelift or whatever. I don't know the terms.
Interesting. I love the celebrity dentistry videos, and anytime they come up on my TikTok, I send them to you. I mean, yes, this is obviously a smash for me. I am here to comfort him in his time of need.
Okay, Mark Ruffalo.
Smash, easy.
Really?
He looks great at every awards show. Yeah, I'm very into him.
I think I'm going to say pass. He does seem like a very nice human, but I don't know. There's just something about it. Maybe I have, like, the poor things roll in the back of my head, but I just couldn't do it. No.
That's fair, I guess. Mark Ronson.
Him on the red carpet, not as hot. Him playing guitar or bass during I'm Just Ken and when Ryan walks up to him. And he has his shirt unbuttoned with his chest hair showing. Hard smash.
Definite smash. Getting flustered. I don't know what it is, but there's just something so cool about him that I love. And he has this 70s look to him that I'm very into.
Boogie Nights vibes.
Meryl Streep has a lucky daughter.
Next, we have Steven Spielberg.
I can't believe you put this on this list. He is such a sweet man. This is like putting Martin Scorsese on the list. I have to say pass. I would love to talk to Steven Spielberg, and he seems wonderful. But for the purpose of this game, I have to say pass. Scared for your response.
I just needed to know your boundaries. And now that he has Kate McKinnon's nudes, I jokingly.
Yeah.
My answer is pass.
Next, we have Matthew McConaughey.
I started to watch Interstellar last night after the ceremony. I think that's more of a smash for me, but there was something going on that I'm passing here.
I'm passing too. He has a chaotic energy now that I understand why people are drawn to him, but if it was like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Matthew McConaughey, Interstellar, Matthew McConaughey, absolute smash. But on the stage last night, no.
Chris Bowers, the winner from The Last Repair Shop.
Oh, smash.
I think he and Sean Wong are my top two on this entire list. He's handsome. He's well-spoken. Absolute smash. My friend texted me that Mariupol director is hot. And I'm like, what? And then right after was Documentary Short. And I was like, Chris Bowers is way hotter. So this was just funny. But
that is smash. Funny. I did think that about that director in the moment too, though. While we're on directors, Christopher Nolan.
Oh my God. No, pass.
Really? Is he too old for you?
Yeah, I think so. No, pass.
I'm going to say pass as well, because I don't want to come between him and Emma Thomas, who seem to have a wonderful marriage. But young Nolan, yes.
Oh yeah, the photo that's been resurfaced from... Was it Following or Memento or something?
It looks like a Polaroid. Like, he looks like a young...
Like a World War II soldier.
Yeah. He looks really, absolutely, really good in that photo. Yeah,
I would smash that version of him, too. Yeah. Okay, Cillian Murphy.
Smash. I know I'm taller than him. It's fine.
What did I say on the episode? Did I say smash or pass? I can't remember.
I think you said smash.
With him in his naked shot in the chair. He was almost too cute last night. He did look really good. Ugh. I think I'm going to say pass.
He looked really good.
It's a close call, though.
You're always more discerning than I am in this game. Next, we have Ryan Gosling performing I'm Just Ken.
Can we, like, put all the Kens together? I will still say smash.
I wouldn't say smash for every Ken, but Ryan Gosling, I just love him so much. I've been into him since I was... I don't know, in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about him that I find irresistible.
Kingsley Benadire was all in on his performance. I mean,
I do love him.
Simu Liu. It was just so fun.
Not Simu Liu.
It was so fun seeing everyone together. Smash.
All right. We got to close this out with a good one.
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino has a new child with someone who is my age. Actually, my age. But that does not mean I'm saying smash. I am saying pass here to this Al Pacino. If we're talking Serpico, Godfather, obviously it's smash. Mm-hmm. But Al Pacino in his 80s, I have to pass.
If it meant that you would have a child with Al Pacino, you wouldn't smash?
I still have to pass.
I didn't know they had a child together.
Yeah, I gotta say pass.
Yeah, very much pass. They did have a little montage clip of younger Al Pacino yesterday, and that is a smash, yes.
I love how every year you put, anytime we do this game, you put older and older men on here just to see what I'll say. All right, well.
What a way to end the episode and the year. With not only Smash or Pass, but I think a wonderful telecast. Actually, the best telecast I have seen in my history of actually watching and covering the Oscars. And just some great winners. I think there's a lot to love here. From the speeches, to the presenting, to things they did with the telecast. So I'm very happy with this year. Thank you all to following us and listening along. And I look forward to next season and next year on the pod.
Yeah, this has been such a great season. We had so many good movies in 2023. And it's always just a nice way to tie the bow on the season. I think our Oscar recap episode, which is always our season finale. We will have a bonus episode. So while this is our season finale, next week, we will have a bonus episode where we will be reviewing Dune Part 2. We know you've all been waiting for this, and we really couldn't save it until season 5 because we will be taking a short break. We always need to rest and recharge between seasons. But I can't believe we're getting into season 5.
5 is nuts.
Yeah.
But we stuck with it, and I'm ready to get back into our Oscar rewinds and some of our favorite episodes and ways to cover episodes of years past and not just the present, even though I think Dune Part 2 will remain a part of the conversation until next March, dear God.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking about Dune Part 2 for a while, but I agree. I'm excited to go back in time and think about film history. So just to give a little preview of how we'll start season 5, we are going to start with 1974, one of my favorite years in film history. We'll be spending a few weeks on this year. So we'll be talking about Chinatown, The Godfather Part 2, paranoia thrillers like The Parallax View and The Conversation. I am so excited to talk about these amazing movies and to get into a new season.
And it's a big year for anniversaries. 1999 was a big year for us and just growing up in film. So a lot of movies from that year, The Matrix, 10 Things I Hate About You, and some great anniversaries along the way, like Gone with the Wind, which is celebrating 85. That's playing in theaters in April. So if it's around, check it out. Also, The Wizard of Oz from that year, which I believe will also be in theater. So lots of movies that hopefully we'll be covering this year.
And for our Patreon subscribers, we will also have an Oscar Wilde After Dark episode coming very soon on Madame Web, another 2024 fun release that I am very excited and I think will be very silly. But thank you all again for listening this season. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. If you really like our show and would like to subscribe to bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/OscarWilde, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at OscarWildePod.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time.